Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, 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 oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away. Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, I do. Need a little help. Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all.
Gotta change the world from what it used to be.
Can't
do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Need some help, yeah.
Need some help, yeah.
Come on.
Wake up,
everybody.
Martin Luther King Jr. was an American Baptist minister and activist who became the most visible spokesman and leader in the American Civil Rights Movement from 1955 until his assassination in 1968. He was born on January the 15th, 1929 in Atlanta, Georgia, and assassinated on April the 4th, 1968 in Memphis, Tennessee. What was Martin Luther King famous for? He's known for his contributions to the American Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. His most famous work is his I Have a Dream speech delivered in 1963, in which he spoke of his dream of a United States that is void of segregation and racism. How did Martin Luther King change the world? King was largely responsible for the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights of 1965. The Civil Rights Act banned discrimination in the workplace and public accommodations based on race, color, religion, or national origin. The Voting Rights Act protects African Americans' right to vote.
We'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. Yes, our theme today is 57 years later, what we learned from Martin Luther King Jr. That's right. For the past 57 years later, what have we learned from Martin Jr.? That will be our discussion today. We would like to have you to weigh in on this particular theme because we believe at Missing Pages of History, the presentation of history is very important if our people are to move forward. You have just listened to a narrative of Dr. King, and we would like to hear your narrative of Dr. King. And we will have this discussion with the panelists of members who represent another radio station, who is our sister station called Africa on the Move. They will have some of their panelists on today giving their perspectives and their perspective only, and we'd like to hear yours as we deal with this particular phenomenon. 57 years later, what have we learned from Martin Luther King? But like always, you know, Mr. Pages of History, we always like to give you something to think about when it comes to this concept of freedom. Freedom is a concept that often talk about. People's trying to achieve it. People trying to live it, and millions of people have died over it. So let's just give you something to think about today. We can give you a definition that came from the first president of Guinea, Brother Ahmed Sékou Touré, when it was in the process of achieving their independence, and France offered them a so-called choice of independence versus freedom. And this is how Brother Touré, Ahmed Sékou Touré, best described the nature of what freedom means to him. He stated that the notion of a continuing French community will maintain our status of indignity, our status of subordination. We prefer poverty in liberty to riches in slavery. Did y'all hear that? What did y'all think about that concept and that reaction? That the people of Guinea under the leadership of Sékou Touré, as you look at the conditions of African people in Guinea, and we look at African people around the world, let's read that concept again, where he stated that to France and Charles de Gaulle that the notion of a continuing French community would maintain our status of indignity and our status of subordinate. We prefer poverty in liberty to riches in slavery. Think about that. And when we come back, what we're going to do is we're going to play one of Dr. King's speeches as he discussed the three evils of the society, followed by a group dynamic discussion on today's theme, 50-something years later, what we learned from Martin Luther King Jr. This is Missing Pages of History, and we now will bring Dr. King to you in his own words.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everyone and wish everyone a happy New Year's, New Year 2014, and welcome to Missing Pages of History, a show that is dedicated to giving information where the communities can become informed and use this information as a tool to make their community a better community. Again, we hope everybody had a nice, healthy, and productive holiday season, and we're going to start a New Year's off with one of our key topics, which is what's going on in the neck of our woods. With us, we're going to have some of our analysts and members of
Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome everyone and wish everyone a happy New Year's, New Year 2014.
As you can see, there are some technical difficulties. Something has gone wrong with our board that is out of our control. It's really interesting. This has never happened to us before. Like always, when you're struggling for your freedom, there's nothing that your opposition and your enemy may do. This is something that was not planned. So we can do like we always have done, been very creative in terms of moving our struggle forward. What we're going to do, we're going with some music or inspiration, and when we come back, we're going to introduce our panelists for the day, and we're going straight to the discussion, and we'd like to have you to join in and give your views and perspective on this theme today. 57 years later, what have we learned from Martin Luther King Jr.? We'll be right back.
Can't take
That's right. Learning to love yourself and love your people is the greatest love of all. That means also your community. We'd like to welcome you back to Voice of MPH Radio. At this point in time, we're going to make our transition straight through our discussion of the theme. But before we talk about theme, there's one particular acknowledgement we'd like to make on this program to our beloved sister who just made her transition out of Guinea. We're going to turn that particular special announcement over to one of our guests today, Brother Anthony. We're going to welcome Brother Anthony, one of the members of the radio station Africa on the Moon. He has a special message that we would like to send to Guinea and the Guinean people based upon one of the important transition that just occurred in Guinea dealing with the African family. Brother Anthony, we now turn the mic over to you.
Thank you. Revolutionary greetings to you, the panelists, and the listening audience. Revolutionary condolences on the transition of Hadja Aminata Touré. The All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, and its women's union, the All African Women's Revolutionary Union, GC, sends our revolutionary heartfelt condolences and empathy to the Touré family, to the people of Guinea, and the Sékou Touréism movement regarding the transition of our sister, Hadja Aminata Touré, who has joined our ancestors, the AAPRP-GC, AAWRU-GC, does not mourn but celebrates the lives of all who live a life in service of the people. It is our understanding that sister and compatriot Aminata Touré was one of those persons who served the people, and we therefore acknowledge and celebrate her life of service and work. Ahmed Sékou Touré, her biological and also an ideological father to us all, taught us if life is limited for man, it is not limited for the people. And therefore, the AAPRP-GC, AAWRU-GC, express its praise of Aminata Touré's work and contributions while with us in improving the lives of our people in Guinea, which has now defined her character and recorded her legacy in history.
Thank you, Anthony, and we send our condolences as well from Mr. Page's History to the Touré family. Thank you, Anthony. Right now, we're going to talk about the theme today. 57 years later, we have what have we learned from Martin Luther King Jr. With our invited panel today, which is composed of members and panelists of one of our sister brothers' radio station, Africa on the Move, we first would like to first and foremost acknowledge our co-host today, Brother Alex Joyner, who also will be participating in the discussion. We'd like to bring in Brother Alex and welcome to Mr. Page of History. Brother Alex.
Yes, and thank you so much, Brother Lee and Susie, for wonderful opening. And today has a special remembrance for me going into Dr. Martin Luther King, the holiday itself, because been fighting for that holiday for a long time for the state of North Carolina so that we could honor it. And I appreciate all the efforts that were made by so many people to get it done. And I'm just so glad to have been a part of that moment of when it happened, to actually see the governor sign it into law. And it was just a tremendous day for me. and it's a tremendous holiday, you know, for man that we do honor and respect and give heartfelt, you know, sympathy, you know, for his family because they're still surviving today without a father and without a husband. Dr. King's life and meaning meant so much. He gave so much. He did so much. And it will be spoken about today, and we will talk about it in an honest dialogue and hope people see every side and every facet of this man's life because he had so much to give. But there are myths, there are misconceptions, there's facts that shouldn't have even been printed. But as history is being distorted now, we're beginning to get so much stuff that has came from another universe almost to say what it is about Black history and why it should be removed from schools and teaching and training, which is ridiculous because in Black history comes not only pride, not only self-confidence, but also an uplifting of an identity as a people that we can go forward built on the strong foundation that our ancestors have left us cemented. And so I look forward to move forward today in a wonderful discussion with the panel. And I turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Alex. We now will introduce our guests from Africa on the Moon Radio. We'll bring in Brother Afton Williams, and we'd like to welcome him to Missing Pages of History. Welcome, Brother Anthony.
Thank you for having me.
Introduce yourself, Brother Anthony.
Sure. My name is Anthony Williams. I'm in addition to being a panelist on Africa on the Move, I'm also an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Our objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
Thank you. Next, we'll bring in Brother Haki. Welcome
Brother,
to Missing Pages of History.
Brother, thanks for inviting me. My name is Haki Kumati Mashoki. Currently, I'm with African Awareness, colloquially known as the Radio Rebels, and I'm pleased to be here today to discuss this very vital subject, I think, which is quite pertinent to the advancement of our people in the society. So I certainly hope to contribute in a manner in which is, you know, conductive, a manner in which provides some clarity in terms of this particular issue. And again, Brother, I want to thank you for inviting me.
Okay, following Brother Haki, we now bring in Brother Maurice Robinson. Welcome to Missing Pages of History, MPH Radio. Brother Maurice.
Greetings, Brother. Thank you so much for having me here. Again, my name is Brother Maurice. I'm a worker for the community and a staunch Pan-Africanist, and I'm happy to be here today. Thank you.
And next we will have Brother Moses. We'll bring Brother Moses in and welcome him to Missing Pages of History. Welcome, Brother Moses.
Thank you. And greetings to everyone. My name is Robert Moses. I'm currently with the Africa on the Move and also with U.S. Metro D.C. Coalition in solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. I just thank you for allowing me to be on the show. Thank you.
Thank you for participating, Brother Moses. And to our listening audience, as you can see, we're on Missing Pages of History. We want to be underserved communities. We have many organizations in our community, and we need to know one another. So you'll get a chance today to be introduced to some of the organizations that is within your community, and you should take upon your time to get to know who they are. So let's get started right now on today's theme, 57 years later, what have we learned from Martin Luther King Jr.? First and foremost, I would like to direct y'all in the area of narratives. You know, a lot of time we look at the history of African history, narratives are always created, most of the time, not necessarily by us, but by other outside forces. And the importance of understanding the presentation of our history and telling our history from our experiences is very important. So based upon the past narratives of Martin Luther King, how would you describe the past narratives of Martin Luther King Jr., and how would it be different if you had to tell a narrative of who Dr. King was? Start off with you, Alex. Your narrative of Dr. King, and how would it compare to the historical narratives that we have heard so far on Dr. King?
Well, again, coming from a researcher, writer, opinion, we go very broad, and we pick up on things that other writers may have written, other journalists may have published, other speakers have talked about, and we do our diligent research to come up with our own opinion so that we can put forth maybe something that hasn't been determined by another author. There are many great books out about Dr. King, and Travis Miley has a wonderful book that he wrote, and it gives you an in-depth vision of Dr. King, his mission. But when I look at a young man in his early 30s, it brings me to the fact that most men around that age are just beginning to become seasoned into many of the things that Dr. King was discussing, which is the war on poverty, voting rights, education, social program, the business aspect of African Americans, the war on Vietnam, America's involvement in many countries, and why we were there. To be such a young man and to question such issues, to bring debate in houses of Congress of why America should respect the poor, the hungry, the disabled, the homeless, were discussions our Congress had never heard before. The eclipsement of the civil rights movement toward the signing of the Civil Rights Bill was just one of the majestic points of the civil rights movement itself, because America had, from its beginning, had always decided that the rich should decide everything, know all the answers, and provide for each class that was up under it, but yet wasn't willing to take the responsibility and move forward. But as long as it seems like the masses of people were happy and content with the Jim Crow laws and different things that were setting the country back further from unity than it would ever become to, Dr. King was forced on a national stage. And in it, he had to bring a special, special conscience to America, because that is what we have to deal with first. When you're dealing with your enemy, the first realize that that enemy has a conscience. Then you go after it. It doesn't mean that it's going to bring you peace, but it means that maybe it will bring you dialogue, because dialogue usually get things started. If you can't talk about anything, then yes, war and fighting it out usually is the most common place when we're dealing with European Americans in this country. So we have to realize that there has to be some type of dialogue before and after whatever battle may be, whether it's a battle in the Senate, whether it's a battle in the House, battle in the White House or wherever, that battle has to be fought with words. Agendas have to be planned. Organizations have to be formed. Something has to be done on both sides to say either we're going to agree with this idea or we're going to disagree. Dr. King, many times I found out that there were disagreements with his ideas and his plan. But you expect that because none of us were born with the same likeness of ideas, the same cares, the same wants, the same responsibilities. So we have to have an open dialogue and discuss these things if we want to do it peacefully. So when I look at his nonviolent platform, I saw where he was trying to move forward with certain agendas. But as I continued to do my research and different things, I found out how he was swayed, how he was persuaded, how he was looking for other means and ways of not only the conscience of America, but also to say that we won't lay down and be trampled on just because we're trying to turn the other cheek. But that we have other leaders, because you're dealing with me right now, and my message is nonviolent. But you're dealing with other leaders, and the message is not nonviolent. The message is the same message that you brought to America when you invaded the Indians' homeland. So you either listen to my message or deal with more severe consequences. And I think that's what prompted Johnson to do what he did. After looking at how African Americans were being treated and beaten and how the Jim Crow laws were not right for any human being. So it was through simple dialogue, trust, having faith, conscious, that I say Dr. King expanded them all, and he gave us a platform to ride off of. Now we got bills and stuff stalled in the Senate, stalled in the House, and people have lost respect and dignity for each other. We need to return back to where our conscience is and move forward, because this is a fight that's going to be there for a long time. There's no simple solution at all, because we're dealing with an adversary that does not want to really give you your civil rights. And I turn it back over to another panel.
Thank you, Alex. Go to Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, your take on your critique of the narrative historically, how King has been presented, and how do you see King in general, if you had to create a narrative? Brother Anthony.
Sure. I think the narrative on King is that he's presented as a dreamer, someone who was committed to nonviolence. But I don't think that is the most important lesson he left his people with. The most important lesson he left us with, of the many lessons he tried to teach, was to teach Africans in the U.S. at how to face their enemy without fear. I think if you look at his body of work, especially after 1963, toward the end of his life, I think that was the most important he left us with, how to face our enemy without fear. And that is an important lesson, because
you really can't fight for your freedom effectively if you're afraid. And because of the centuries of terrorism that we have been subject to as a people by various, organizations and groupings. Let's see, in the mid-50s onward, a lot of us were afraid. And let's see, and I think, in retrospect, looking at the history of our struggle, the most important lesson that Martin Luther King Jr. left us with was how to face our enemy without fear.
Finish your point, Brother Abdi.
Yes, and that's critical because it's important to be organized and lose your fear of your enemy in order to fight effectively for your freedom.
Thank you, Brother Haki.
Yeah. I think one of the things, as the previous two panelists alluded to, was the whole struggle around civil rights. I think Martin Luther King deserves an enormous amount of praise in terms of his stand when it came to civil rights struggles in America. But the problem is, I think, generally speaking, it's one of human rights. And I'm particularly proud of the fact that there was some evolution in terms of Martin Luther King's thoughts. When it came to human rights, at his later years in life, he really began to recognize different points in terms of the human right character in terms of struggle when it comes to, preserving human dignity. So to the extent that he talked about human rights, he talked about people's inevitable rights to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. He talked about the fact that the level of violence that perpetuated by American society not only perpetuated in America itself, but perpetuated throughout the world. And as such, when you talk about the heroic struggle of the people of Vietnam, it certainly could be justified in the context of the brutality being inflicted upon the Vietnamese by the U.S. military-industrial complex. And so in that context, when you look at the kind of violence being initiated against African people here in America, then certainly one could, as Malcolm X would say, certainly one could justify in terms of the use of resistance in terms of combating that kind of violence. So his kind of evolution in terms of his thinking was key in terms of why those positions of power realized that at some point they realized that Martin Luther King had to be silenced. And so when we talk about in terms of his legacy, we got to keep in mind that often when people talk about Martin Luther King being a dreamer, keep in mind, that because he understood, by virtue of struggle in society, that position was untenable, that he had to take into consideration, the level of hypocrisy that existed in the context of human, in the context of American discourse. Often in America, when you talk about violence is always justified if, in fact, it's America perpetuating violence against someone else. But when someone perpetrates violence against America, then somehow that violence becomes wrong. So clearly there was a real disconnect, a real hypocrisy associated with the use of violence. And so I think Martin Luther King sort of clarified, that inconsistency and sort of make it possible for these people, this movement to move forward. So we have to credit Martin Luther King in terms of his ability to actually galvanize people around this whole question in terms of hypocrisy that exists in American society.
Thank you, Haki. We move to Brother Maurice. Brother Maurice?
Yes. The previous panelist said it best. If you look at a later part of King's life and you look specifically to his speech title, The Three Evils of Society, you would see that King became clear of who the enemy was, and I'm going to speak about who he was identifying as an enemy. And it's one particular quotation. He stated that capitalism built by hard work is a myth. It was built by the enslavement and oppression of African people. That's not my words. That's the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. words. And he also did a speech. Because when we talk about, like Brother Anthony said, man, we you know, how our narrative, how their narrative of King, the powers to be, their narrative of King is always this chauvinist, I have a dream speech. They made it. They made that speech popular. They the ones that you know, that proper they use that as propaganda to counteract the real what King was really getting at. And King, you know, he understood the importance of Africa when you look at his speech, Birth of a New Nation, quote unquote, Birth of a New Nation. When he was specifically speaking about the independence of Ghana achieved by Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Now, if we look at this more radical, what they call radical King, or I call it the more serious King, because we got to look at it. I Have a Dream speech was done in 1963. He was assassinated in 1968. And they never look at, if you look at this a year prior to his assassination, you would see that King was quite clear on what we need, where we need to be struggling for. Not picking up trash in the neighborhood for the volunteer service, not painting the sidewalk or doing murals of him, of doing a painting, not even putting a monument up of him. He would rather for those resources and those economic, from my understanding now, from my understanding of what I learned from King and hearing his speeches and read from his book, he would rather for those resources to go for the benefit of the masses of poor people and the masses of African people, from what I understood, as everybody should know by now. The last march that he was going to lead or do was a poor people's campaign. And I conclude by saying this quotation of one of his last quotations that he stated. Black people must develop programs that would aid in the transfer of power and wealth into the hands of residents of the ghetto, so they may in reality control their own destiny. So, I mean, I don't understand why we are trying to take somebody else's narrative of King. The people, honestly, the people that killed King, you know, the people that went against King, we're going to take their narrative, the United States of America, we're going to take their narrative of, are we going to go clean the streets? And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I'm talking about when you talk about King, what he was fighting for now, this is the quotation that we spoke about from his mouth. This is the stuff that we should be attacking, the three evils of society, militarism. Why is AFRICOM is all over Africa? Why is the United States of America, NATO, is all over the world trying to steal the land of the native people of that country? You know, this is the stuff we should be attacking, poverty, racism, all three of these things were birthed by capitalism. So I conclude right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Maurice. We'll go to Moses. Moses, your thoughts.
Yeah, Dr. Martin Luther King was a great leader. I adhere to Malcolm X in that, you know, I could not rule out violence in terms of defense of the gains of the people and the defense of the people. And so we differed on that. But nevertheless, he was very conscious politically of the world situation. He understood that capitalism was founded on the enslavement of black people, and that he understood that there comes a time when silence is only betrayal, and that you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. His dissent was not equal to disloyalty, but that his love for the country made him a dissent, and that war is the enemy of the poor. You know, he said that the Nobel Peace Prize was like a commission for him. It was a mandate for him to keep going. And we need a true revolution of values. He was being a preacher for morality, which a lot of people don't have. He understood poverty, racism, and militarism was the problem, and that millions of dollars subsidized subsidize people to not grow cotton in the South and stuff was in contrast to the sharecroppers who were ignored, who lost their income because they weren't able to grow anything. And he said he was saying that scientific power was great, but that it was coming at the expense of moral power, and that we need a moral revolution, and that it was materialism versus humanism, and that we are, you know, when we were in Vietnam, we were 100% citizens in war, but when we got back home, we were 50% of in at home in terms of citizenship, and that he understood that, but he had confidence in humanity, and that there were some decent Anglo people, and that he had faith in that they would come through in the end. I think that was his biggest thing, was he had faith in the Anglo community, that they would turn around in their views. And I don't know, there was a lot of things he did and said, but I think those are some of the key things for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Moses. Panelists, you know, when we look at history and how history is written, particularly from Western perspectives, normally they follow the narrative that there are great men and great women that make you think individuals can move nations. Now, looking at the narrative of Dr. King, when we talk about what is history, what is power, how things are done, do you think it's a correct reflection when one paints King in a position as being all-powerful and not looking at the role and behavior of the masses of the people? Who truly make history? And who truly generate power to force other forces to change? I'll start with you, Brother Haki. Respond to that phenomenon as relates to how King has been presented in history. And maybe we need to correct that perspective.
Yeah, well, that's important. We do correct that perspective, because one of the things you and I understand is that no individual makes history. People make history. But you got to understand that people in positions of power have a self-interest in terms of promoting the idea that greatness comes with the individual. In fact, the society is oriented around the whole notion in terms of, you know, praise for the individual. So clearly they have a self-interest in terms of promoting such a thing. But clearly when we look at the history in terms of at the time Martin Luther King lived, we can't discount the importance in terms of the contributions of organizations like us, the Black Panther Party, the Black Liberation Army, you know, those were radical progressive organizations that clearly had the eye of the United States government, in particular because those organizations offered active resistance in terms of the oppression African people were inflicted with. Also, equally as important, I think, one of the things that those organizations sort of highlight, unlike King, was the whole point is that when you talk in the context of capitalism, you can't talk in the context of consciousness. Capitalism has no conscience. For anyone who thinks capitalism has a conscience, then that would be a serious flaw in your logic. Clearly, when we talk about capitalism, we talk about the obsession with things over the essence of human life. Then clearly, the intent to obtain possessions at the expense of human life is a common occurrence. And so as such, then we understand that life in the context of capitalism has no real legitimacy. And if life has no real legitimacy, how you treat people has no real legitimacy. So clearly, you know, in terms of King's evolution, then we have to credit the fact that there were other organizations at the same time he existed, including Malcolm X organization, Organization of African Unity, who were pivotal in terms of bringing about real change in the context that the old organizations working in concert was able to push the people forward in terms of their thinking, in terms of how they see the world, that make it possible for the elevation on an individual level for someone like King. So clearly, Brother Africa, it was a joint effort. It took lots and lots of people working to change the thinking of the masses of people in terms of getting them to think on a much higher level. So clearly, it's always a mass effort. It's never an individual effort.
Brother Anthony?
Yes. King was a catalyst for change. And the masses are the makers of history. They're the only makers of history. Now, individuals can can serve as catalysts for change by their leadership, but they have to have people to lead. That is why we say the masses are the makers of history, because it was the people in Montgomery that asked King to lead lead the bus boycott that catapulted him onto the world stage and made it possible for people to have equal access to mass transit, regardless of their ethnicity or age. And he influenced and was influenced by other organizations that existed at that time, and some of which he founded, like SCLC. And, you know, he was also influenced by SNCC and numerous other organizations, which our brother Haki mentioned. And these organizations had an influence on his outlook. And that is what is not often conveyed in the historical narrative, that that he himself was a youth, and he was influenced by the organizations that emerged and existed around him. And I think that's an important lesson that has to be conveyed when talking about Martin Luther King Jr.
Maurice.
Yes, yes, just to echo Brother Anthony, when you look at somebody's background and upbringing, you know, his father, King's father, was a pastor up in Atlanta, Georgia, and from what I understand, his father was active in his community, and you know that has an influence to see him, you know, his father and his mother, you know, that right there laid the you know, gave King the seed to have that appetite towards and his siblings to have that appetite towards fighting for their people, our people, and you know, and the masses always, you know, see people. Think that one thing I want to say, current day brothers and sisters, we think that that's something, oh, that's in the past, it happened in the past, it's no longer here. That's not true. The struggle always been here, and you know, brothers and sisters, or you know, Africans, the people in general, masses in general, always had to make a choice of what side of the struggle that we was going to be on. Either you was going to be Brother Moses stated earlier, a quote from King, silence is betrayal. Either you're going to speak up and fight for our people, or you're not going to speak up and fight for our people. This has been a determining struggle since day one, since we got here, since in the United States of America, since, you know, we've been enslaved or oppressed. And this is the thing that we've been fighting for. So the struggle ain't went nowhere, it's still here. And I'm going to quote something that another freedom fighter, still living and breathing, Bob Brown, who was around at that time, he stated that, yeah, you know, this stuff was passed down generation to generation. We look back at it, or my generation, we'll look back at it and clump and lump all of those generations, Dr. King generation, Martin Garvey generation, Malcolm generation, Kruman generation, we'll lump them all into one generation, and that's not true. These were struggles that was passed down to generation to generation. And that's what we must have to understand now. And you got to understand what the struggle was. And you got to understand tactics, you know, when he says nonviolence, he was using nonviolence as a tactic at that point in time. But I believe he was saying that tactic is not going to get the desperate freedom that we needed. He was learning, from my understanding, that tactic of nonviolence. It's not going to work. We're going to do something more revolutionary, if you will, radical, if you will. And I think that's the main one of the main reasons why they assassinated him in Memphis. So I conclude with that.
Okay, Brother Maurice, we go to Alex, and before we go to Alex, most definitely before we leave here today, we're going to talk about this concept of violence versus nonviolence. So, Brother Alex, your take on this whole question of the great man versus the people. How much credit should the people get? Can one man do all this stuff? Can one man acquire power that can make a nation change? When we write history, who are the true history makers? Brother Alex, your response.
Well, Mr. Lee, I appreciate all the panel's opinions because that's what we need to talk about, you know, not just say that this man deserved a holiday because someone else wrote history and said he should be the Negro that we should put on a pedestal. But we have to learn that people earn respect and earn dignity because of the sacrifices that they made, and especially from personal family view. Ms. King had to give up her husband for the struggle. So when we look at how far did we have to climb, the mountain was insurmountable that we had to get over because of the Jim Crow laws and the opinion of the American people at that time, which has been swayed back into what we see today, opposition to the right to vote, opposition to integration, opposition to segregation and jobs, businesses, job opportunities. There is so much going on in America that when Dr. King was trying to lead his people in a struggle, we find ourselves within those same struggles. But it's the operation that goes forward when you put people together and bring organizations together, just as the Black Panther Party, just as the SNCC organization. You bring people together to have them present those ideas, because that's the change that everyone wants. You can't have just one organization fighting for this or one organization fighting for that. You all have to be united in your ideas to press forward. When you are united with an idea that you have to collectively take to someone else, and you have to have passion in that idea and in that rightfulness, that this is something that if one man enjoyed, why not all men enjoy? Why does one man go to jail for just 1 ounce of marijuana, but if another man had 100 pounds of it, he can walk free, and just because the color of his skin or his wealth? Laws had to be changed. Ideas had to be presented to the masses of people that when you go in a voting booth, that vote counted. It wasn't rigged. You weren't pressured. You weren't bought off, but your vote counted. The message of the Constitution of the country itself said this is how we elect our officials. Then the vote must count, not only on elected officials, but also on laws. That those votes in Senate, those votes in the House, can change and make laws and reverse laws that have disenfranchised African Americans since they have been here on this continent. So we're talking about a huge fight, and a huge fight that's going to continue. We have to continue to work with each other to move forward on this. And everybody's idea is equally on the table. And that's like this panel discussion here today. Every idea is being thrust forward so that people at home, listeners and callers, can get it in their mind and say, hey, it is serious now. If it was serious in 1950, if it was serious in 1960, if it was serious in 1970, it's even more serious today, because we're at a point in life that if we don't do something about what's going on in our neck of the woods, then we are going to be in trouble in a few years from now. So I thank you for giving me this time.
You know, we then go to Brother Moses, and we actually to start us off in the area of the three evils in the society, according to Dr. King. Dr. King, during that time, stated that this society was faced with three major evils. Those evils were, one, the issue of racism, two, the issue of materialism, issue of militarism. Those three evils. It was a major problem then, and is it a major problem today? Why aren't we speaking to those particular issues for all those who say they are followers and practitioners of Dr. King? Brother Moses, your response.
Yes, he talked about materialism, which was the underlying problem with poverty, basically, that the greed and interest of people was to gain material possessions, you know, created poverty, and then there was racism and militarism, and of course Vietnam was the big militarism at that point. I just want to say that the masses and the masses alone make history, but the individuals come along to sum up the experiences of the masses and to articulate the experience of the masses in a form that they can identify with and see their interests being pursued. And so that's how they become leaders. And theory is a guide to action. It's a summation of the experiences of the masses taken in its general aspects. And so, you know, sometimes the glass is half empty or the glass is half full, but you need a part of the solution or you're part of the problem. And the point is not just to understand the world. The point, as Marx said, is to change the world. And so we voiced our interest and put forth our theories and our aspirations in the interest of changing the world, not just understanding the world. And violence, pigmentation of the skin is not supreme. The pigmentation of the skin must be seen as part of humanity and diversity, and this should not be an obstacle to freedom and liberation. And that was his thing. He had faith that we could overcome our differences and unite to be by the color, not just by the color of our skin, but the content of our character. So, but the racism, you know, this country was founded on racism. It built up on the backs of black slaves, and that's the history of this country. And he was opposed to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Moses. Brother Maurice, speak to the issue of King, as he articulated that the three great evils in the society at that time were, one, racism, militarism, and materialism. That's what then. What about now? Why are there not major focuses on these particular behaviors as relates to the society for those who claim to love King?
And that's the true question that we need to look at today. Now, the reason that the powers to be, the United States American government, are not looking at those three aspects, they don't negate that out of King's, how they deliver him to the masses, they eliminate that. Of course they did. Because those three things, if they didn't eliminate it, they would be doing self-suicide of their values, of their principles, of their system, capitalism, imperialism. This is what King was attacking when he said these three evils of society. And you know, it was to me, it was a softer way of calling it what it is, capitalism, imperialism. These are the seeds of that, as he stated. Capitalism was built off the backs of enslavement of Africans. Colonialism was built off of the minerals. Capitalism was built. You wouldn't have what they call, I forget what they call, the robber barons, right? The capitalists of the great capitalists, the great pull yourself by your bootstraps, these people, Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, Firestone. You wouldn't have none of these people without the rubber in Liberia, without the petroleum in Northern Africa, without the resources, Lipton iced tea. He wouldn't have none of this fortune, or Hershey's himself up in Pennsylvania, without the cocoa and without the minerals and without the palm oil in Africa. You understand what I'm saying? So when King talks about this, we got to understand that's what he was fighting about, fighting against when he says militarism up in Vietnam. Yeah, it was Vietnam but it's also around the world, and definitely in Africa, down there in the Congo, taking out uranium and developing the Manhattan Project and dropping bombs, Nagasaki and Hiroshima. That's the militarism that I understand he was talking about. This carnage of this carnage that he was taking place. Now we got to understand too. Now we got to understand that if you study history try to understand or just study it, Kwame Ture, also known as Stokely Carmichael and Mikasa Ricks, they was putting pressure on King, as from what I had interpreted from them, of like, hey man, you talking about nonviolence, but what you gonna do about Vietnam? What you gonna do about America putting their bombs in people's yards and killing the natives of their land, the people of their land, and taking their land? What you gonna do about that? So it was some political struggle. It was some arguments and some enlightenment, if you will. And that comes from organization. You know, Kwame Ture and Mikasa Ricks, they was part of an organization. King was part of an organization. SCLC. That's why as we prophesized on Africa on a Move, organized, as Brother Anthony always prophesied. Organized, and that's very factual, man. You have to organize. You have to support, at least if you're not going to organize, at least be affiliated with an organization, supporting an organization. I don't care if it's just something of decorating a place for an event, preparing the food for an event. Working out the technology for an online event, a meeting, what have you. Align yourself with a revolutionary political organization. You got the All African People Revolutionary Party, DC. You have organizations like the PRP, Pan-African Revolutionary Socialist Party. You have We Talk Colonialism. You have Friends of the Congo. You have these organizations out here that are fighting for the betterment of what we call black people, more the correct term, Africans all around the world. What you call black people, we came out of Africa, as that, therefore that's why you call Afro-Cuban, Afro-American, Afro-Brazilian, what have you. Even on the Caribbean, you probably be in Jamaica, you probably be in Haiti or the Dominican Republic. But if you know your heritage and you do your DNA test, your roots, your seeds, and your roots are Africa. I don't give a damn if it's, say, Gambia, Nigeria, Ghana, the Congo. It's still Africa at the end of the day. So that's what, from my understanding, to answer your question, brother, that's where we are today when King talks about these three evils. But if we continue to take the commercial version of King, you got to do service in your back, do service, go pick up some trash, you know, the everyday charity work. And I'm not knocking charity work. Trash do need to be, we do need to keep our communities clean. That's a no-brainer. We do need to feed somebody if they are hungry. That's a no-brainer. We do need to clothe somebody if they're cold and need clothing. That's a no-brainer. But at the end of the day, the root of all of this stuff is capitalism. That's what birthed this poverty and this pollution, if you will. We're talking about go pick up a trash, pick some trash up. How about they go remove these factories, man, out of our communities, these cancer valleys that we have around here from these factories, these pollution that's going into the water, the tobacco, the waste station. Why every time I go through a predominantly African community in the United States, there's a waste station not too far from it. And I conclude with this. I know I've been talking for some time, but you got a waste station, you got a tobacco factory, you have a DuPont, you have Alcoa taking aluminum again from Africa. You have a tire plant. They're taking the materials from Africa, and then they're going to come to America and pollute the black community here and exploit us, our labor here. And they still, it's a two-way street. Once we come to understand that, like King was doing, I think we can eliminate all of this going to pick up trash, this poverty, these everyday ailments that we have in our community, the unorganization of our community, which caused youth violence, killings or what have you. If we go fight the big piece of this thing, this capitalism and this imperialism and neocolonialism, and get organized, or like I said, at least align yourself with organizations who are doing the work, we'll be farther along.
All right, thank you, Brother Maurice. We're going to Brother Hockey. Brother Hockey, your analysis on King's position during this time, where he stated that the three evils in the society were racism, militarism, and materialism. Now, do they still exist today? Where is his fight to critique today's world as relates to U.S. policy and U.S. behavior? Brother Haki, your response.
Brother Maurice is absolutely correct. When we talk about materialism, racism, and militarism, essentially these are euphemisms for capitalism. The problem is in terms of political organization, in terms of trying to move people forward, one of the things we've got to talk about is question in terms of conditioning. People are socialized to believe that capitalism is a great thing. And if you actually say the word capitalism, then you automatically turn a lot of people off. Because in a society which you're orientated to be, want to be individualistic, to the extent in the capitalist society you're able to achieve some crumbs, some modicum of crumbs from the table, then you're more apt to support such a system. So in that context, we talk about the class divide that exists in the African community. There are those in the African community who embrace capitalism wholeheartedly. So in trying to reach them, if you talk about capitalism, then essentially what you do is turn them off. So from a tactical point of view, King understood that he couldn't use that word capitalism a great deal. Even though his discussion in terms of Riverside Church in Harlem, New York, he talked specifically about capitalism. The bottom line is that he understands in terms of, you know, mass movement, in terms of reaching the masses of folks. You can't talk about capitalism. And because people don't, number one, they don't understand what capitalism is. And secondly, they embrace capitalism because of the kind of socialization, the kind of conditioning that's inferred by media, the educational system, and so forth and so on. So to the extent that we talk about the ills of capitalism that exists back in the 60s, those same ills exist today. In fact, the ills that exist today are much more pronounced than were back in the 60s. Part and parcel because we weren't able to form a movement around some honest discussion, some honest critique in terms of what capitalism really is. In the context of what capitalism really is, one of the things when we talk about materialism, that's just a given. Anytime you elevate things above human beings, or you assign significance to things versus human beings, then the exploitation of other human beings becomes inevitable, because in order to get those things, then you exercise maximum exploitation of those human beings. And so this is the fundamental problem we have. In the context of militarism, now we got to understand one thing. When you talk about militarism, you take what you want. And it's in a society in which increasingly capitalism is declining, and the people in the ruling class, they understand that. The masses of people may not understand that. The ruling class understands that the society is deteriorating. And you know, and so the rumors posed being conducted in terms of the question specifically to ask, you know, is capitalism on decline? You know, increasingly, 46% and up of the people in the society say capitalism is in decline. Many of those people who say capitalism is in decline are only right. And so in their mind, because they favor capitalism, they see capitalism very favorably, for them, the narrative is not to attack capitalism. The narrative is to attack those who oppose capitalism. Again, a function of socialization. So people are miseducated to believe that capitalism is a great thing, even though it maximizes the kind of misery that's extended to the population. So clearly, Brother Africa, if we had did a better job in terms of conveying the inadequacies of capitalism, then we'd be much further along today than we were back in the 60s. But because we don't understand the inadequacies in terms of capitalism, we tend to embrace that. And until we can break through that that armor, you know, that says capitalism is a great thing, then in terms of a real definitive movement, in terms of human dignity, it'd be very difficult to achieve. And I close with that.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Talk to me, Anthony.
Yes. I think those three evils still exist today. And as a matter of fact, the conditions for the masses of people are worse today than they were in the 60s. Because we lack organization. And also, capitalism is becoming desperate, so it's intensifying its repression against the people. And also, in terms of militarism, militarism is worse now than it was when Dr. King was alive. Because you did not have the enormous amount of resources allocated to the military back then that you do today. At the expense of programs that would improve the conditions of the masses of the people. And create opportunities and also pollution and alleviate environmental pollution and climate change. But because of the greed of capitalists, there is an enormous amount of resources allocated toward military spending, toward intervening in the affairs of other countries. That has worsened. So I think it's a very real problem. And the problem and the reason why we're not making much headway in terms of increasing people's awareness is because the ruling bourgeoisie of the U.S. has control of the media and educational system. That is why people do not understand the impact of capitalism. And they have forgotten one of Martin Luther King's most important lessons. And that is to face the enemy without fear. But because we don't understand it, we fear capitalism or outright support it in our confusion.
Thank you, Anthony. Alex, talk to us. The three evils that exist today, should they be challenged? If not, why not? Tell us your thoughts on this particular issue.
Well, thank you. When we look at the time frame that Dr. King brought this forward, and every one of the panelists were dead on in their assumption of what Dr. King meant, and I just want to expand on that a little bit forward. When we look at racism, racism has existed since we got here on this continent. Racism perhaps will be around long after I'm dead and gone. There will be someone that hates me, never spoke to me, never talked to me, never wondered or cared who I was. But just because the color of my skin, they will hate me. They will do everything they can against me. Dr. King spoke out against that. And he wanted us to love each other. The light skin, the dark skin, the middle skin, the yellow skin, the red skin, it didn't matter. He wanted us to love each other. So the message of love somehow would move over to equality, to freedom, to justice, to move us in a better place than what we've been since the moment we were here. When we look at the mentalism of it, how we were ashamed to be black, and we have people that are sports figures, that are business owners, that are actors, who instead of saying that they are a proud black African-American colored person, that they rather say, oh, I'm a Eurasian, a Caucasian, or any kind of thing that they can come up with instead of saying that they are from the ancestral race of Africa, which is predominantly black in color. When we are taught to hate ourselves, whether the Willie Lynch letter was true or not, we constantly teach our children to hate themselves. Because blonde hair, we put on blue wigs, we put on red wigs, we change our appearance because sometimes we're not happy with the kinky, nappy, knotty hair that we were born with. Because we've been taught that that is wrong to walk out in public to wear that nappy fro. So we have to look at, we are mentally being taught to hate ourselves. Then we look at the materialism as we try to keep up with the Joneses. When we try and keep up with the Joneses, we got to realize that we're on the low end of the totem pole when it comes to money. It's hard to keep up with the Rockefeller, the DuPont, the Morgans, when you ain't got that type of money and income. But yet and still, we buy the best of goods for our children and ourselves. We overspend, overcharge our credit cards. We live in mortgage we know we can't afford. But we are trying to keep up with the Joneses because of materialism. Materialism, yes, is founded upon capitalism because this is a capitalist society. And we have to learn how to deal with capitalism as business owners, homeowners, and as workers in general, because that's what the company, the country operates on. So we have to learn how to re-educate our own selves and forge partnerships, forge business ships we have to have a major discussion in all our African groups that are here in this country, because everyone needs to be involved to move forward. And that was not only King's dream, because the dreamer had many dreams. It wasn't just that one day that his child and another child might enjoy sitting together in the same classroom, or sitting together on the same bus, or sitting together in the same courthouse side by side. No, King had bigger dreams than that for us. But he gave us the torch to carry on. He passed us the baton while he was living, because he knew his life was coming to an end. His ideas would be over. But that didn't mean that the race had to fail, but we can only move on through dialogue, talking, organization, presenting a platform that we can take to our own masses of people to expand our wealth into this society, that we have an equal say into what's going on. As they say, if you have nothing to put up, then it's time for you to shut up. And when I look at our race, for 400 years, we have not acquired that mass of wealth to be recognized that this is a force that we got to deal with. The most of our money and finances comes out of our pockets weekly, biweekly, or monthly, and transpires until someone else's wealth. We work hard, long hours, do whatever we have to do to make it. Many of us barely make it from paycheck to paycheck. The playing field is not fair, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a voice in what goes on in this country. So we have to organize again and get together and start developing our own so that we can have great financiers who can help us and start credit unions and can start financial organizations that can move masses further in this capitalist society. Because once you get money, then everyone turns and look at somebody that's got something. But someone that's homeless and penniless and has to ask you for a dime, then you sooner or later begin to ignore them instead of pity them. And so as we get to be number three in this country as far as the minority is concerned, we're moving to number three. And as we move there, remember, there's number four and number six. So we have to be careful how we keep sliding down the line. Because like I say, you make more noise when you got more people. If there's only one person in the room, it's like a whisper in a huge hall. But when it's packed, everybody's going to be listening. Might be a lot of confusion, but at least you are there. And with a purpose in mind, we can move forward. And that is the biggest thing that Dr. King wanted us to do, is to move forward collectively. Not singly, not this group above this group or that group above that group, but we all progress forward because that's how we get to the mountaintop, is all together, not just one, but everybody. And I turn this back over.
Okay, on that note, this is the voice of MPH Radio. What we're going to do is take a station break with Music with a Purpose. And when we come back, we will continue the discussion 57 years later. What have we learned from Martin Luther King Jr.? This is MPH Radio.
we are here, bombs over Baghdad, trying to get something we never had. Let's start with a good dad, so real but it's so sad. And while we burning this incense, we gon' pray for the innocent. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about Chi-Town. Let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Israel. Right now with Israel. Let's talk Nigeria. In a mass hysteria. Yeah, our souls were brought together so that we could love each other, brother. We save the nation with no support for education. Cause right now it don't make sense. Right now it don't make sense. Let's talk about our part. My heart touch your heart. Let's talk about living. Had enough of dying. That's what we all about. Let's do more giving. Do more forgiving. Yeah. Our souls were brought together so that we could love each other. Sister, we are here. We are here for all of us. We are here for all of us. It's why we are here. Why we are here.
And we will continue the discussion on 57 years later. What have we learned from Martin Luther King? First, our announcement is that we would like to remind everyone who listens to this program on Sundays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you can listen to Africa on the Move. You can go to Blog Talk Radio and type in Africa on the Move, or you can call 323-679-0841 and listen to their program. So support our sister station. Next, we just remind you that this year, in honoring of one of the founders of this radio station, Emmanuel Joyner, we'll be going on a tour to Cuba with the African Awareness Association from July to the 23rd to 31st. If interested, please go to the website www.aaa-cubacubatours.com, or you can email them African Awareness Association 2 at Gmail. Also, if you have not purchased your book yet, please do so. support the Pan-African Roots, and it published its book on We Demand the Full Disclosure and Indigenization of All Slavery-Era Forms. Please go to the website for more information by going to www.a-aprp.gc.org. When you want to talk about slavery as an institution, who, what, when, and how, this is a valuable book to have in your library. So please support the author, Brother Bob Brown, and support the Pan-African Roots. So those are our announcements for today. What we're going to do right now, we can go back to our theme, and we want to let you know, if you would like to participate, please call in at 818-337-0016, hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last 4 numbers. So right now, as it relates to our theme today, and talk about this whole narrative of how King has been presented, I think it will be remiss if we don't deal with this subject area a little bit in terms of getting maybe different narratives on this whole question of the issue of violence versus nonviolence. Many people think that looking at the legacy of King, one of the errors he made was that he made the principle of nonviolence as a principle and not as a tactic. We know that looking at the history of a different country, you know, it got its freedom not to nonviolent but to violent means. We look at this country. When there were other countries on side problems, they used violent means. So what is it about those who are oppressed, they teach the philosophy to them of being nonviolent, and those who are oppressed, they back practice violence. So panelists, we got each one of y'all, if y'all can let me y'all response to no more about 2 minutes. Question, violence versus nonviolence. How do you view the lesson from King? Was he correct or incorrect, or just in essence, how do you view this? We'll start off with you, Brother Efton.
He was incorrect to make it a principle. As I stated earlier, I think his most important lesson was teaching our people how to face the enemy without fear. He made nonviolence a principle because he was a principled person, and he believed in Christianity sincerely, not realizing, that not even Jesus was nonviolent all the time. And there's the example in the New Testament where he and his disciples cast out the money chargers from the temple, you know. So, but I think that doesn't diminish the many contributions he made to our struggle, for freedom. It's just that I think his biggest mistake was making nonviolence a principle instead of a tactic in our struggle.
2 minutes, Brother Hack, your thoughts on this issue?
Yeah, nonviolence is always a tactical question, never a strategic question. One of the things, in particular, when you talk about capitalism and you talk about its lack of a conscientious dimension, then clearly you're talking about people who sees value in force. So if people in position of power see value in using force, then they're not hesitant in terms of using force in terms of achieving an objective. The problem is that when you're nonviolent, you acquiesce to it, then you encourage more violence. That is the problem. But tactically, in terms of utilizing violence, a sense of response that, you know, when you use violence, then we're going to use violence as a means in terms of discouraging you from using violence. And so it's very, very useful. The problem is that when you talk about in terms of using violence and eligible, you've got to realize that you're talking about some people going to have to die. I think that is the point that turns a lot of people off, because in order to achieve your freedom,
some people have to die. No one wants to die. Everyone wants freedom, but no one wants to die. So it seems to me, to the extent that people are conscientious in terms of the necessity, in terms of political building, in terms of necessity, in terms of being legitimately free, when people gravitate to that level, then they're willing to die in terms of being free. But we're a long way from that, because most people still are caught up on this thing where, you know, listen, I like the idea, but the whole, but what you have to put into it in terms to achieve it, I'm not with that. So clearly Martin Luther King was correct in terms of confronting, you know, your adversary. But one of the things that when you by preaching the nonviolence, essentially what he did was to empower the other side. I think that was the biggest downside in terms of teaching, you know, nonviolence, you know, as essentially a strategy. And I close with that, brother.
Okay, Brother Maurice, your position.
Yes, from my understanding, I believe that MLK at one time, not believe, this is a fact that I have read upon, that he was a owner, he was a gun owner of firearms for his protection of his family. So that being said, from my understanding, it's obvious that he was using nonviolence as a tactic, if you will, and I definitely I think Brother Haki hit a dead spot on. Everybody wants freedom, and also every Christian wants to go to heaven, but some Christians don't want to die. Or everybody wants freedom, but nobody wants to die. And as you've seen in struggle after struggle, the spirit of the Haitian Revolution, some of the freedom fighters that and the heroes that died or was murdered in the Haiti Revolution. From my understanding, they understood that, hey, I got to risk myself. I got to put myself on the line for the freedom of my people and generations to come. I think they understood that clearly. But back to this thing of nonviolence, I believe, you know, nonviolence definitely was a tactic. But I think if King would have took a more approach, I think he was coming to his understanding that if you understand class struggle, these people, the powers that be, they're not going to give up any freedoms for us or any type of wealth or justice or anything to us, to the masses, without a class struggle. And sometimes that class, the class struggle is definitely going to end up with armed struggle, because these people, as you've seen over and over, even with King's assassination, that you're not going to get any type of liberation, any type of freedom, any type of land that's owed to us, any type of independence, any type of self-determination without going through a struggle. But we first got to understand class struggle. And if you understand class struggle, that you're not going to get your freedom or your justice through nonviolence.
Brother Moses, 2 minutes or less, please.
Yeah, I think Anthony hit it on the head. He was a Christian. He was trying to follow Christ, and that's his version of nonviolence. Certainly, you know, as revolutionaries, we see nonviolence as a tactic. Definitely, we try for all we can to be nonviolent, but if the enemy attacks us, we must answer him with appropriate response. And so, you know, that's the situation we're faced with. I'll just leave it right there. Thank you.
And Brother Alex, your response.
Okay. Yes, I agree with most of what the panel was saying. And again, when we look at nonviolence, Dr. King, yes, faith came first. We believed in this God. And whatever God that he chose to believe in was his own. And so he tried to perpetuate that and to his mass audience that the Christian way to do things was to turn the other cheek. Because if we go eye for an eye, then that leaves everybody blind. So once we start taking each other out, then what do you leave? We're such a small portion of the population. How many people what we have actually murdered and killed, how many lives would have died on our side trying to get the rights that we deserve. It fights always seem good starting out, but the tragedy is what's left after war, after battle. Did you achieve the results you went into it? As most generals would say, you don't go into battle unless you figure you're going to win. When you're outnumbered and don't have the money, supplies, manpower, and people value their lives, they didn't want to give them up. But that is the price of freedom, as Nat Turner. And there were many other preachers that gave their lives so that we could be free, led insurrectionists, that they were no longer were going to take what was being done to them on the plantations to be sold, traded, degraded, hung, murdered at a whim. They were didn't want to fight that battle anymore. And so they came armed and ready. There are many ways to fight a battle. Dr. King found out that just nonviolence was just one of them. And yes, he was working in other ways with other groups and talking to other people to find out what other ways were possible. But again, we have to realize this man was only 39 years old when he died. Not a seasoned veteran, but he was 39 years old. So he made a lot of choices fast for his age. And one of those convictions was the nonviolent stance. But soon, before he died, he realized that the way that changed this country's true feelings is that we have to truly stand up for each other. And once the other side knew that we were willing to die for our freedom, then it became conscious on the other side that we can't push these people around. We've been pushing around for 400 years. But finally, they're out here marching and walking and talking. They're organizing. They're getting together. They're ready to do something. That's what changed America's conscience, that thousands of people were getting together, marching and all. Just imagine these thousands of people had guns. Total different description now if it had went from peaceful to unpeaceful. The little looting and rioting that goes on with a few marches. Just imagine what would have happened if 25, 75, or the 250,000 that was up there on D.C. taking over the Capitol. So that's what we have to look at. Dr. King's way may have not have been the perfect way, but it was just one of the ways to convince the other side that you got to listen to us. Otherwise, we can come back another way. So,
and that's why it's so important. And that's why it's so important that we critique and review and revisit our history from a position of strength, and so that we can learn lessons and correct the mistakes we have made. Now, in closing for this program today, I'd like each one to respond about to 1 minute. As a question that I have to ask, because it's a very important question then, as King had to deal with, and it's important today. And this final question is, the issue and position of the influence of power of Zionism, taking a position in pro-Palestinian and against Zionism. Was King correct then, and why we don't hear many African leaders today opposing the behavior and the policies of Zionism that is taking place not only in Palestine but throughout the world? Start with you, Brother Anthony.
Yes, I think a lot of Africans, particularly in the U.S., are confused about Zionism. They tend to think that Judaism and Zionism are the same things. They're not. Zionism is a political movement, just as the Ku Klux Klan is a political movement. And
it really has nothing to do with the principles of Judaism. A lot of Africans in the U.S. and the U.S. population in general does not understand that because of Zionist control of the media. And those who do understand that have to clarify that confusion and understand that Zionism is a form of racism and is just as dangerous a form of exploitation as other forms of capitalism are.
1 minute, Brother Hackey, your response.
In a nutshell, corruption. It's not that the African leadership is not aware of the horrors of Zionism. It's that the Jewish Political Action Committee doles out a lot of money. And those African leaders understand that they won't have access to that money, then keep their mouth shut. So clearly, you know, the kind of corruption. The internalization of values would suggest that money is more important than anything else resonates with a lot of political leadership, particularly in the African community. So no one should be surprised that they tend to give short notice to the concerns in terms of, you know, Palestinians and their fight for justice and freedom over there in Palestine.
Thank you, Brother Hackey. Brother Maurice, 1 minute or less, your response.
I think Brother Anthony hit it right on the head, because when we talk about King, you know, a lot of if you recall the history, even in my home state of Richmond, Virginia, it was pastors here that did not like King due to him speaking out. I feel like I'm assuming now. Oh, you messing up my money. We don't want you here. Yeah, I digress. But in these last 50, 40 seconds, you know, Petersburg, Y.T. Walker. Hometown, they welcomed King down there. You understand what I'm saying? And Petersburg was hit badly, hit terrible on the level of a Tulsa, Oklahoma. I conclude.
Thank you. 1 minute less, Brother Moses. Your response?
Yeah. We. The question was about.
Why people choose not to deal with the power and influence of Zionism that King was concerned
because you know, we've been raised in this Judo Christianity philosophy and we've been interpretation is that the Jews, as if they always had the land there in Palestine. A lot of people are just that ignorant, as they think that this has been going on, that this struggle has been going on forever, and when it's only started since 1948, and certainly Zionism is racism, and Martin Luther King was inevitably on a collision course with those proponents of Zionism. It was just a matter of time. I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
And 1 minute less. Alex, your response. Can you hear me, Brother Alex? I think we have.
Yes, I can. I'm here.
Okay.
There was a statement made that a man like Martin Luther King, that stands so openly with Israel, despite his own private qualms and criticism by younger, more radical black Americans who had discovered the plight of the Palestinians. When we look at what was going on, and again, just like the previous panel members have stated, yes, it was all about the money, the influence, who can do what and whatever. When you are the party in power and you have money to support whatever idea that you think is right, then there's no moral responsibility as far as maybe someone else sees it. So there was a big problem in turning that blind eye to the plight of the Palestinians and all the other countries surrounding Israel. And it began to grow on its own because of the capitalist society that sponsored it and made it came into being the state and everything. And so the support for Israel, you know, came from the grassroots. And once it moved up, then there was no turning back. But nothing is perfect that we're going to engage in this world as long as we know it. There are going to be truths and untruths. So we just need to follow the truth. And I thank you.
And on that note, we'd like to thank all our panelists today for giving us their perspectives on that theme, 57 years later. What have we learned from Martin Luther King Jr.? Before we close out, like always, we would like to get our final thoughts on a message to the community by Brother Alex Joyner. Brother Alex, can you give us a message to the community?
Again, I want to go back to in the beginning, Susie did such a wonderful job and talking about Dr. King and all the panel members. I appreciate all your remarks and everything, and I'm going to weigh this in definitely because I've learned a lot here today, and I hope our listeners have learned a lot. And that's what we have to do, because back in the 60s and 50s and 40s and 70s, we had to learn because there were no opportunities for us in a lot of areas of this country. Segregated jobs, schools, healthcare, voting districts, financial institutions, the prison system, and our own neighborhoods were the things and topics of the day. Then all of a sudden, a credit system was implemented to lock in the good rates for the millionaire and privileged individuals who wanted the laws of Jim Crow reinstated to secure their weight or right of passage, because the so-called minorities overrun this country and the government. And all out war now is against the people of color and is being fought in every state legislature to bring back discrimination and suppress your right to vote. The direction and the question of the quality of the voter instead of his intention is now be misrepresented. We got to realize that years ago, when this country first started, those first voters were white, wealthy, landlords who made all the decisions for the middle class, the poor, and the indigenous natives, and the slaves who were in bondage. They made their decisions to profit themselves. And the ones who lacked the education to understand the law had to deal with it. The society of the United States never wanted to see a collapse in this nation. It only wanted to rebuild itself and reinvent itself and provide more income for the top 10% of this country. The voting rights for women and the education of the poor was off the table. They only needed you to provide their labor for the industrial revolution that America was coming forward into. So as we look at Congress now, as they try to put the brakes on so many good things, so many good bills that could be passed in Congress to make us on a more fair playing field, others are saying it's not the right time. Oh, this is something from the past. We don't need to revisit it. But I say we need to fight back as they did in the 50s, as they did in the 60s, they did in the 70s, because that right to vote is so important until we absolutely, absolutely have to get to that ballot box. So that's going to bring me back to something I read before, and I hope you re-enjoy it. And that was the content of one K. character. Many people all over the world know of a man called the Dreamer. A simple speech urged on by an inspiring crowd of more than 250,000 on a hot day on August 28, 1963, during the March on Washington, Jobs and Freedom, in which Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke out about civil and economic rights and the end to racism in the United States of America. Dr. King began his speech with a reference to the Emancipation Proclamation, which declared millions of slaves free in 1863, in which he stated, 100 years later, the Negro is still not free. Then near the end of his prepared script, improvised due to Mahalia Jackson's cry, "Tell them about the dream, Martin." These few words have become the most remembered and most famous as he joined Jefferson and Lincoln in the ranks of men who shaped America's conscience on the rights of equality for all of us promised by the Constitution. The speech has also been described as having a claim to the greatest in the English language of all time. Dr. King was given 7 minutes to speak, and he made the most of them. His most treasured words of the speech that day were, "I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." Spoken by the Honorable Dr. King almost 60 years ago, it expresses one of America's bedrock values, its language almost sounding like a constitutional amendment on equality. Let us take a moment and reflect on what Dr. King meant about the content of one's character. The core economic value of honesty, taking responsibility for one's actions, being fair and just, and being someone who promotes love and compassion in others. The fight for civil rights continues today, as has for hundreds of years, for the people of color. Why is this such a preeminent challenge for the people of color? What is it in the content of our character that we do not deserve full citizenship and equal and uncompromising voting rights? Why are we victimized and suppressed every time we speak? Are we the disenfranchised and criticized citizens of the country? Why have the wealthy and the Christian turned their backs on our rights in Congress? Fewer than half of African Americans believe that their dream will ever be a reality for them. Deeply rooted in the American dream, there was no place for women and minorities to be educated and successful. They were seen as a threat to privilege and supremacy. The land was free to some and the pursuit of happiness for the rich only. The content of one's character was never judged fairly by this country in the 1700s, 1800s, and 1900s, or now in the 21st century, which we now live in. We are still lynched and bounded by laws passed to suppress our right to vote at within the justice system. We have so far to go to climb the ladder of freedom from the restraints of unfairness and I ask you today, as Dr. King questioned the conscience of America 60 years ago, when will America let freedom ring? The freedom to work together without scorn or prejudice, to work together without backstabbing and lying on each other, to struggle together as poor and wealthy, and to learn how to share and give with a loving heart, to go to jail together and to serve equal time and accommodation for the same crime committed as fair justice for all, to stand up for civil rights together, knowing that all men were created equal and that all men should be free to live within the codes and responsibilities of God and man's laws that are rightful and fair for all. The content of our character, proud, brave, hardworking, honest, trustworthy, intelligent, inventive, and reliable men, women, and children whose ancestors gave their freedom and lives to build a better America that didn't include them in the original Declaration of Independence, the United States Constitution, or the Bill of Rights. They fought for the respect and the right to be included in amendments and acts that stated that they were equal citizens under the law. So why do we continue to fight for our character, the content of our work, for the lives given in war and slavery were a supreme gift to this nation? What will it take for America to live up to its creed? As Dr. King stated, freedom and justice for all. Then just maybe we will be free at last. Thank God Almighty. Free at last. Thank you.
We'd like to thank you, Alex, for your message to the community. And we'd like to thank our panelists for their articulation to the theme, 57 Years Later, What Have We Learned from Martin Luther King Jr.? And we'd like to thank our listening audience for allowing us to come to their homes this evening to share this information. We remind you that MKH Radio is a biweekly program. Our next program will be on the 29th. Of January at 1 p.m. So please put down your calendar, tune in, spread and share the words. And I will leave you with some words and a thought that somebody once stated, to do nothing is to be nothing. Our people need your help. Mother Africa needs your help. The world needs your help. We cannot stand on the sideline and do nothing. Do what we are learning from a lesson of Dr. King by joining and forming an organization that seek to help to liberate and eradicate the oppression that are afflicting your people in the world. Take that as a motto. Until next time, we will thank you for joining us, and we will continue to try to make our contribution moving forward by continuing to add to and to build in and fill in our missing pages of history. We'll see you on the 29th. And we leave with these words. If you had the choice to come, what's wrong with your choice?
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday.
if you'll only listen to what I have to say. And how long have you held your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
would make a better society. And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? And if you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brother?